All right, well, let's get started. Once again, thank you all for coming. And we're looking at our second session on grace through grief. And this session is on helping each other through the valley of grief. Last week we looked at how to deal with grief ourselves when we're going through it, but then we want to learn how to help someone else. And of course, none of us can be truly prepared to go through the grieving process. But in the same way, we're equally at a loss when it comes to helping someone we know and care about who is grieving. Often words fail us. We may feel very awkward. We may feel that we're doing more harm than good in trying to help someone in a time of grief. And of course, when we've passed through the valley of grief ourselves, that, as we talked about last week, that does equip us in many ways to help others in their grief. We have a greater understanding of what they're going through, greater empathy, having gone through that valley. We recognize some of the places they're going to, and we can be a help to them. But also, as we considered last week, each one's grief is unique. And each person may take a different path through the valley of grief. You can't say, oh, just do this, this, and this. This is what I did, because a person may not be able to do it in the same way as you did. But it's something that we do not want to be miserable comforters, as Job's friends were. Job in the Bible was a man, if you're not familiar, that he suffered a great tragedy and lost all that he had, lost his children in an accident, and also lost his health. And he had these three friends that came, and they were supposed to be there to comfort him, but they made it worse, not better. And Job said to them, as they were talking to him, he says, I have heard many such things. Miserable comforters are ye all. And he was just frustrated with them because they basically heaped up words against him and shook his head at him and just kind of criticized. Basically what they're doing is saying, oh, well, all this happened to you because of some secret sin, some bad thing that you did that you're hiding. And so if you come clean with us and tell us what you've done that's wrong, then everything will be good again. And we, as we understand what happened in the story, none of that was true at all. And so we don't want to be like that. And in many ways, you can read the book of Job and kind of get that. This is what not to do in trying to comfort someone. And so instead, we need to learn patience with someone. We need to learn compassion, and we need to learn discretion. When to speak, when to be quiet, what to say, what not to say. And we need to recognize also what we are or not able to do in the unique relationship we have with that person. That depending on how close we are with that person, there's some things that we can do to comfort. Say if it's a family member and you're very close to that family member, that there's things you can do that maybe no one else can. If you're just a neighbor or an acquaintance, there might be limits to what you can do. It doesn't mean you can't do anything, but you realize that, okay, I can't give as much comfort as, say, a son or a daughter or someone that's truly close to them. But as well, love obligates us to not only do what we can for those that are hurting, but also to learn what we can so that the comfort we give is as helpful as possible. So, and that's the thing, is that we want to try, and sometimes we fail and we're not sure, but that's why we want to learn, so that we can improve, so that we can be as effective as possible as we try to comfort someone that's mourning. And so We're just going to consider a lot of negative strategies that we should avoid, but as well positive strategies that we can employ in trying to help someone with their grief and through their grief. So here are just some thoughts of what to avoid when attempting to offer comfort. And these are things just to kind of keep in mind as general rules. Avoid making flippant, generalized comments such as, "I feel your pain," because the person might actually get upset with you. "Well, how can you feel my pain? How do you have any idea what I'm feeling like?" Because, yes, you may have had some kind of experience with grief, but it may not be the same, and it's you can't feel just the same way as them. Or you say, "It will be okay." Well, it might be someday down the road, but right now it's definitely not okay. But there's sometimes we've got to think we have to say something, so we try to think of something to say, and a lot of times it would have been better just not to say anything. And so listening often can be more of a comfort than speaking. And so just kind of to think through what we say and just be wise in that. We need to avoid attempting to explain why things happened as they did. And that's kind of something that Job's three friends did. They had it all figured out why all this stuff happened to Job. And of course, they didn't have a clue. And that's kind of the same with us, is that we can try to think, "Oh, this happened because of this." We try to answer the whys that they might have, and the thing is, we don't know the whys, and we may, none of us may fully understand the whys till we get on the other side of glory. But as an individual goes through the various stages of grief, it is good for us to avoid reacting in judgment or criticism to what they may say or do in the moment. Because they may be expressing anger. They may be putting blame on someone. They may be speaking against them, or like beating up on themselves or other things. And all of that is happening. But it's where they're at such a surge of emotions that they sometimes don't even know what they're saying. And once they're calm again, then they may even apologize for what they're saying. But you don't have to step in and say, "Oh, you shouldn't say that, shouldn't do that." Just let it go and it'll get sorted out later. But as well, recognize the limits of your relationship with the person grieving and avoid overimposing yourself. That as a neighbor, you'd come to give comfort, but you realize that you can't give the same comfort that, say, a family member could. So sometimes it can be you're there for a time, but then when other people come, sometimes it's good to just step away and let others comfort them. That you want to just kind of have the sense of knowing when to step back. And a big thing too is when you're trying to help someone that's grieving is you always remember it's about them and it's not about you. It isn't something where you're going to help that person so you feel good inside. It isn't something where you go to that person and think, "Oh, all the experiences I've had with grief in my life, I can use them to help this person and I can share my wisdom about that." No, that's not what we're supposed to do. And it isn't kind of something where we do it with the expectation of something in return, of they give us a pat on the back and tell us what a wonderful person we are. Sometimes we can be there and they might get upset with us over something and just kind of vent on us for whatever reason. And sometimes we can get upset and say, "Well, because they did that and I'm only trying to help, I'm never going to come back and And it says, no, we can't do that. It's recognize what the person is dealing with, the situation they're in, and just be willing to let things go and get sorted out later on. So, when things first happen, there's time to provide initial comfort. And first, we want to think of giving comfort through your presence. And it's kind of a thing, when the shock of, say, a death happens or an accident, and you know the person's hurting, you may be unsure what to do. But a lot of times when we're unsure, we go, I don't know what to do, so I'm not going to do anything. And that's not where we should go. Because the fact is, you can't be much help if you don't show up. At least if you're, and that's with a whole lot of things in life. You got to show up to be able to actually do anything or accomplish anything. And so, it's best to go to the bereaved as soon as it's appropriate. And as you do that, you're demonstrating by your presence that you care. And of course, recognizing that. It isn't something where, okay, if somebody just died, they're going to the morgue to kind of view the body, that you're like waiting at the door of the hospital when they come out. Like that's probably not the best time. But kind of maybe the next day or a time where it can work. And sometimes it just helps to maybe ask if what would be a good time. And if you don't know what to say, there's other ways that you can give comfort. Maybe you can find a good card, just sign your name to it. There's a lot of ones where people are paid money to write sentiments that are comforting, and so rather than you have to try to think them up, then signing your name to something can be good. Flowers, fruit basket, meals that are prepared, like they're basic things, but they can be meaningful and helpful to someone that's grieving. But the thing is, you don't necessarily need to say anything to be a comfort. Sometimes just being there and listening, and that can be a help. Just they have things they want to express, and having someone to express them to, even though there may not be much of a filter on what they express, it is helpful. But it's sometimes, too, when you come, you can find that there's things that you can do to help around the house, that things kind of have to be done, but the individual may not have the emotional, physical energy to deal with those things. That they're grieving and you want to give them the time to grieve, and it isn't something, again, it's not about you. It isn't something where you think, well, I got to be the person that comforts them. It's like, I can be a help in comforting them. But sometimes just thinking, okay, what can I do that can be a help? That can just kind of take a bit of a burden off of their shoulders so that they can focus on the grieving time. And so it could be something as simple as, okay, there's dishes to be done. Let's fill the dishwasher, run a load, empty the dishwasher. Just get that done. Or if you don't have a dishwasher, wash the dishes yourself. Just something very practical, very simple, but can be very meaningful. That sometimes little things like that mean a lot. The dog needs walking. They don't want to go around the neighborhood bawling, and so you can take the dog out for a walk and get that looked after. It's winter time, shoveling the snow for them so they don't have to fight with that. Or if it's middle of summer and lawn needs mowed, just kind of get that done so that's something that they won't have to worry about for at least a week or so. there's different things like that. Any other thoughts of kind of practical things you could do for a person? Yeah, so like... Yeah, and so that could be something where you, there's kids there, you say, okay, let's take a bunch of books in the other room and let's just sit in the couch and read books for a while. Yeah, no, that's a good idea. Yeah, bringing, if they have errands like that to run, or maybe they had some bills to pay that they were going to do, but now this happened, and so you can run and do that. Or it could be something where, they have to get a suit dry clean that they're going to put the person in, or something like that, that you can say, oh, I can run that to the dry cleaners. Like, and so it's kind of, it's a thing, when you're not sure what to say or do, it just kind of be creative, think, okay, this is something I can do, a practical way I can give help to them in this difficult time. And so it's worthwhile.
Well, these days, like, a lot of people kind of get together and when it's difficult, they kind of want to help
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that can sometimes be like if you're recognizing needs that are bigger than yourself, it's just sort of letting other people know so that need can be met. Sometimes it can be just being someone to do some of the phoning to let different people know, depending on your relation with individuals. Sometimes it can even be kind of as a gatekeeper sometimes, where you sort of can direct traffic a little bit. Say if there's somebody that's visiting and then somebody else shows up, you can just say, okay, well, this person's here, they'll be done in a minute, just have a seat and she'll see in a bit, kind of thing. Like sometimes just there's a lot of different things that if you just start thinking, okay, what can I do that can help this person? And even if it's okay to step into the background, because that's sometimes, again, when we think it's about us and not about, we're not thinking about the person as we should, we want to see how can I be in the forefront of helping this person. Where sometimes the fact that we've taken the lesser role, but it's very significant, people have a greater appreciation at the time to come. But the thing too is when you're there, is you need to be willing to be present with the individual in the midst of their expressions of grief and pain. That when they're sorrowful, when they're crying, you don't need to feel embarrassed to be with them as they cry. That you just—it's healthy if they cry, and like you don't like to see a person cry. None of us do, but it's understandable. And you want to, if you can, be able to cry with them. And that's not necessarily always possible, but you want to give them that. Feel that they're free to do that and they don't have to be ashamed for their tears. Human touch is appropriate, helps to show that you care as well. I remember going to a family reunion when I was a teenager, and I had this one great aunt, Eleanor, that was tended to always be very huggy. And as a teenage boy, I was not very big on hugging. But I know my mom said, just kind of, like, cause she knew what I didn't, just said, just deal with it, kind of thing. And so she came and gave each of us boys a big hug, and it was kind of awkward, but just kind of try to do it. But found out later from her is that she just lost her husband, and so just having like a human touch and hugging meant a lot to her. And so it's kind of learning that sometimes just that embrace means a lot. It just helps a person know that they're loved, that they're safe, that you care. Of course, there's times where it doesn't exactly work if you don't know the person that well, and they're the opposite sex. It might be a little uncomfortable if it's guy to guy. Guys are not always big on like a big hug. Sometimes it's handshake and kind of a pat on the back or something is what works. But it's kind of the thing that you have to kind of try to read it. And I think all of us have had different times where you think it might be a hug and then it's more of a handshake, or you think a handshake will do and then the person grabs a hold of you, and kind of thing. But you're trying to just connect somehow, and human touch in whatever way is appropriate at the time can make a big difference. But at a certain point, it can be best to excuse yourself and make an exit so that others can have the opportunity to help the grieving as well. Because especially in the initial stage from the time of the loss to the funeral, there's going to be a lot of people coming through. And so it's not about you, it's about them. And so it's you do what you can, but feel free to step back, especially if it's something where, okay, initially you're there to comfort, but then some of the family's coming in. And a lot of times you want to just step back so the family can grieve together privately. And then later on you can step back in again. But it's just learning to do that and being wise in how you function. But as well, not only do you want to comfort through your presence, you do want to, if you can, comfort through your words. And that's kind of, you see with Job that he really tried to give his three friends who were miserable comforters a bit of a crash course and kind of basic comforting etiquette kind of thing. And in verse 5 he says, "But I would strengthen you with my mouth, and the moving of my lips should assuage your grief." That he would say, if I was comforting you, I wouldn't tear you down. I'd try to build you up. I'd try to help some of your grief kind of flow away and just try to bring some comfort to you. And so we want to learn to do that. And so your words need to be chosen carefully. And so it's important to listen and respond rather than react. That someone says something, you don't need to point out, well, maybe you should say it this way, or that's not quite the right thought to have. Because as we looked at last week, there's a lot of places you wander through in the valley of grief that it's just part of the journey. There are places you don't want to stay at, but places where people end up. And so just being patient and just saying, okay, this person is reacting, overreacting. I just need to maybe let them vent and then try to redirect or speak in a different way that's going to be encouraging. And the thing too is when you're trying to provide comfort, you're not trying to fix the person grieving. Okay, you're not trying to make it all better for them. You're not trying to take their pain away, because you're not going to be able to. That's really something only God can do. And so you want to speak the truth in love. You don't just kind of say, well, it's going to be all right one day kind of thing. Because it could be, but you don't know when that'll be. And just trying to say that it's not that bad or something like that, or just try to think. Sometimes we almost just try to change the subject to other things so the person isn't talking about something. It's sort of like trying to ignore the elephant in the room. It's just, this is what the person's focused on. And so they maybe need to talk it out, and so be willing to allow that to happen. And so as well, talk openly about the deceased. Don't be afraid of doing that, because yes, it's going to maybe bring tears, but it can be a good thing. Share positive memories as a person thinks and is thankful for the time that that individual had. And as you share things about that person that you appreciate, that they maybe didn't know about, that it just helps them to just kind of value the person that they've lost. But as well, praying with the individual or sharing scriptures with the individual that's grieving at the appropriate time can also be helpful. Proverbs 15:23 says, "A word fitly spoken, or word spoken in due season, how good it is." That it's that idea that sometimes there are words from God's word that can be a great comfort. Psalm 23 is an example. Where the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. In words like, "The Lord, walk through the valley of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." That those are words that can give comfort. 1 Thessalonians, it talks about how we don't sorrow as those that have no hope, but it speaks of Christ coming return to earth for his own, and speaking of how the dead will be raised. And it says of how we can comfort one another with these words, that we have that hope, that blessed hope that we refer to. And so for someone that's a Christian, that has that faith, then that can be a comfort. Of course, an individual that is not a Christian, that may not have much meaning to them. So just kind of recognize what verses can be helpful at which times and with which people. But this is a thought too, is there's time for initial comfort, but then there's time for long term. Because you think about it, from the time that the loss occurs to the when the funeral happens, and you have the kind of the meal afterwards and time for people to visit, through that time, those that are grieving are surrounded by many that are offering them comfort. And you are one among many that's trying to help. And you want to do what you can and as much as you can. But at that point, that's not when they're usually lacking in support. But what always happens is the funeral's over, everyone goes home, and then the grieving process is not done by any stretch. It's actually when reality starts hitting with the person that they are alone. And without these individuals around them, it can be a really difficult time for them. And so it's at that time that you realize, hey, I could help at this time. And on a long-term basis to be a help to them. And that's kind of the thought, is that sometimes we almost try to have our role of comforting almost be like some kind of commando raid, where it's like we get in and we do everything that we possibly can do and then jump out again, kind of thing. And that's not the way that we're supposed to do it. It's not the way we have to do it. That a lot of times we can do a bit of things initially, but then we can continue to do bit by bit through the months and years ahead. And especially when we're not as close to that person as, say, someone that's family is, that we can have those moments where we can connect with that person on a long-term basis to provide comfort that can make a real difference as they pass through the valley of grief. And so, first of all, we can provide comfort through thoughtfulness. And so, as the loss continues to sink in, and it's going to come in kind of waves of grief, spasms of grief, as we talked about, and they're going to continue to struggle with their loved one not being a part of their life anymore, of just with loneliness, with knowing what to do now, just how to pick up the pieces of their life and try to continue on. They're going to struggle with that. And especially we want to realize that any firsts that they go through are going to be difficult. Their first anniversary without that person, or their first time that that person's birthday rolls around and that person isn't there to celebrate their birthday. It could be Christmas, it could be Valentine's Day, it could be Father's Day, Mother's Day. Different dates like that through the year, you kind of realize that's going to be really hard for them. And so if you're thoughtful and you think, okay, this is going to be a difficult time, this would be a good time for me to try to connect with them and just be a bit of an encouragement to them. It doesn't have to be anything big necessarily, but just something. And so being mindful of states, reaching out to the one grieving, you can make a phone call just to tell them that you're thinking about them. Just send a little card or some flowers, or you stop by for a visit. That can be of great comfort to that individual. And so just thinking of those days, that it is in those days where their grief is probably going to be the greatest, that they really could use someone to support them. And so you can be those, that support in those times. But as well, it's a thought that you want to comfort just not just with thoughtfulness, but by visiting them in their times of grief as it continues. Because loneliness can be a big struggle for anyone that's grieving, that they've had this individual as part of their life for a long time, and now they don't anymore. And of course, at the funeral they had many people gathering around them, but then everybody went home. And they're in an empty house that used to bring such joy to them, but now just brings them sorrow because there's so much that reminds them of the person that's gone. And so if you come to visit regularly, that can be a big boost. It kind of helps them to kind of get out of just the thinking that they're in and just kind of be encouraged. So there's different kind of visits you can make. You can make an impromptu visit, unannounced, just surprise them. And that can be an unexpected surprise, an encouragement that just kind of picks them up where they're really down, but then, oh, there's somebody here that wants to visit with me. But then you could have a planned visit too, and that can be good too, because it gives someone that's grieving something to look forward to, that their days are rough, but oh, this person's coming and can have some time with them. And of course, you kind of have to weigh and decide, because you may have a person that would be like, well, I don't necessarily, I'm glad you're here, but if you'd let me know you were coming, I could have kind of cleaned the house up a bit, and because they just weren't feeling that good. And if they know you're coming, it kind of gives them maybe an impetus to kind of do a bit more around the house rather than just kind of sulk alone. But what's important is you want to make a commitment to visit, and then you want to follow through with it. You say, I'm going to visit this person, make sure you come. If you desperately, if you've said you're going to come, you got to come. Because if you don't, that's going to be very discouraging. That they're looking forward to, you might just sort of be the only thing that's picking them up during the day, and if you don't show up, that's one of the worst things you can do. But when you're visiting, you want to give the individual grieving your full attention. And you don't want to be distracted by other things. Say if they're watching a hockey game or something, you want to focus on them and not the hockey. Maybe ask them, can we turn it off so we can just talk together or something. But you want to focus more on listening than on talking. You want to, you're there for them, not for yourself. And just allow them to share their heartache and their struggles without judging. You ask them questions and just how are you feeling, and just allow just the conversation to just proceed slowly and carefully and just openly. But recognize too that there is therapeutic value in both in reminiscing and in expressing grief. That when a person is able to cry, it does release various things from the body that can kind of help a person get some calmness back to their life. And so it's healthier for them to let things out rather than keep them bottled in. So don't think, well, they can't talk about the person. That's probably exactly what they want to do, is talk about the person and just share memories. Because for a lot of people that have suffered loss, what they're scared of is forgetting that person. And so if they can talk with someone, it helps them to ensure, okay, I'm kind of passing on this information so that this person will not be forgotten. And so it's healthier that way. You don't want to have them think they have to keep the bottom in. But then as well, there can be comfort through assisting. And this is a mistake that we often can make, where we say to them, if you need anything, just call. But the fact is, when someone's grieving, they don't have the energy or the capacity to say, oh, I have a need. Oh, this person said they could help me. Oh, I'm going to give them a call. They just don't have energy. It's like, yeah, this needs to be done, and I don't feel like doing it, and I don't feel like calling anybody. And so you want to realize that they're not going to call, and it's not because they don't need help, it's just because they're not at the point where they're ready to just kind of clearly think and ask for help. And so instead, you want to learn to anticipate needs that they might have. Think things through. Okay, this is coming up. This is maybe something they need help in. And so then you want to make specific concrete offers to help, that you say, okay, if you want, I can come over to help you with this. Is that okay? Is this time a good time to come? And then be reliable in helping. If you say you're going to come and help, then help in that specific thing. And so there's various assistance someone that's grieving might need help with. Sometimes it could be regular maintenance, especially if it's an older elderly widow or something. Someone may need to, they might need the lawnmower, might need the snow shovel. And just to be able to do that for them so they don't have to think about that just different things, where it could be cleaning gutters or raking leaves or things of that nature, where just stuff that has to be done that they may not have the energy physically or emotionally to do. Sometimes it can be doing repairs, that some breaks and they used to have someone in their life that could fix it for them, and now they don't. And so you can say, okay, I can change that bulb for you. I can fix that doorknob that's sticking. I can do these different things. Or say individual, say if it's a widow, doesn't really know much about the vehicle because her husband always took care of it, that you could go take it to get the oil changed. If she says that it's giving her some trouble, making a funny noise, well, you can take a look at it if you're mechanical, or take it to someone who is mechanical to get that looked after. Sometimes, say if it's a husband that's widowed, and his wife always did the cooking, it's like he may think, well, I don't know how to cook, and he might be eating like TV dinners all the time. And it's like, you say, okay, well, here, how about I make you some meals so you don't have to do that? Or how about I go shopping for you, or take you shopping, and you just kind of get more of what you want. That it can be something that you can do for an individual. Sometimes it can be finances. That if it's coming to tax time, you can ask somebody, okay, well, do you need help with taxes? And so maybe you can help them with that, or take it to the right person, or say they need investment advice. That they, of course, there's a lot of financial things. There's a lot of times if there's life insurance policies, there's a bunch of money, and they want to manage it well, because it may be what's supposed to keep them going through their retirement years now that they're alone, and so they want some help. And so if you have that knowledge, you can help. If you don't, you can maybe find someone that can help them. Child care, that sometimes the person is maybe needing a break from the kids if they have children at home. Sometimes it may be that they're needing to run one child to a doctor, but they don't want to have to bring all the other kids along. That you say, I can watch them, you take them, or I'll take this one and bring them back, or whatever. There's things like that that can be done. And then socialization, that they may need to get out, and sometimes that can be, well, I'll watch the kids so you can go out, I can take you, or let's go somewhere to a park where you and we can talk and the kids can run around, or any number of things. Those are different things that the person might need that you could offer to provide. Any other thoughts of something that a grieving person could use help with? I've already talked about a few before, but so that's kind of long term, but of course there is a point where you want a person to come out of the valley of grief, and we want to try to help someone that's struggling with grief to come out of it and kind of recover and learn to laugh again and love again. And so grieving is a process that takes time. It's not a process that should be rushed. It's not like we're trying to drag people out of grief. It's no, we're trying to walk with them through and maybe help them out sooner than they would be able to get out just by themselves. But we realize that the valley of grief can sometimes be a valley where some struggle to find their way out of. They become overcome with sorrow. They may be entering into depression. They may just want to give up on living, that their whole life revolved around this one person, and now that person's gone and they just don't know what to do. They don't know if they want to live anymore. And so I've seen some elderly people where it just seems that they just kind of decide to give up on life because their spouse was gone. But there's others that actually, they make the decision to end their lives because they feel that they can't live without that loved one anymore. And so it isn't something where, with a lot of what they go through, you don't want to have to, like, you don't need to feel a need to correct them or redirect them. For most things, you realize, okay, this is a stage, this is a place in the valley of grief that they're going to be at for a time. They shouldn't stay there, and you can encourage them to move. But there are signs when you recognize, okay, this sorrow is becoming too deep. This sorrow could be life-threatening. That you want to understand the warning signs and take preventive action as needed. So these are just some things to think of as kind of signs, okay, if this is happening, maybe we're starting to wander into dangerous territory. So giving away possessions, it's kind of the thing. If a loved one dies, they probably will be giving away some of their clothes and other things because, of course, there's no need of it. But if they're giving away their own stuff too, then you have to kind of question, okay, what's going on? Why is this person doing that? If they withdraw from family and friends, those that would be able to provide them comfort, if they're just kind of staying away from them and not drawing close to them. But that's what a person should normally be doing, is reaching out to family. And when they're pulling away, that's something to be concerned about. Misuse or abuse of alcohol or drugs. That sometimes a person's struggling with the sorrow, that they're trying to drown their sorrows in something else. Or sometimes they're struggling to sleep, so they start taking sleeping pills, but they start taking too much. And they become dangerously addicted to that. And so recognizing that is not something to panic on, but just to kind of say, okay, what's going on? And because sometimes it may be just not thinking clearly and misusing something or not following the prescription. But it's good to just ask those questions. If they have a complete loss of interest in activities they once enjoyed, that where nothing brings any joy to them or any happiness anymore. And then as well, if there's, you see that physically in their appearance and things, if there's suddenly a change where they're eating a whole bunch, or they're not eating as much anymore, they've lost their appetite, they're losing weight. Or say if they're usually a person that cares about their appearance and makes sure that they look good, where suddenly they come in disheveled and that's not, you can tell this is not normal for this person. You can say, wait a minute, what's going on? Then if there's impulsive or reckless behavior where they're taking risks they normally wouldn't, say, okay, this is not normal. But then sometimes with the things that they might say, and these are some phrases that you might hear, where they say, I just can't take it anymore. Say, I'm just a burden to everyone, they think, but they have no value that kind of, it would be better for everyone else if they were gone. They can't think straight anymore. They're having, struggling, just kind of figuring things out, or say, all my problems are going to be over soon. Or that no one can help me now. That they're at a place of helplessness, of hopelessness, of deep loneliness, and it's kind of, as we discussed with depression, that it's a place where you're starting to see a mental imbalance there, that something's not quite right. And it's more than just being sad. And so we want to understand that these signs of distress, what they actually are invitations for help. The thing is with someone that's suicidal, is that usually if they're talking about these things, it's because they're going down that path, but they're trying to reach out and just try to do what they can to try to get help. And so if you connect with them at these points, you can a lot of times prevent them. If it's kind of the thing, at a certain point, some people, they're so dead set on it that it's hard to pull them back. And so you want to just kind of be wise with it. And so when a person does some of these things, says some of these things, it's best to explore what these signs may mean. Just ask, okay, what's going on? Are you okay? And sometimes it's just fine to just simply directly ask the person, have you been contemplating suicide? And it's something that it could perhaps shock them, but sometimes it's actually a bit of a relief that, okay, somebody's willing to talk to me about it. I can get this on the open. I can talk through this now. And it's kind of the thing. You ask them, have you considered suicide? And they say yes. Then the next question is, well, have you made a plan? And if they've already made a plan, then you know, okay, this is serious. This is not just kind of thinking about it. They're already going down that path. And so in such a situation, if they do say yes to those questions, talking through with them, if you allow the individual the opportunity to share their heartache, share what's going on, just knowing that someone cares for them enough to listen, that can sometimes de-escalate the situation where they say, okay, things are going to be okay. But it may be necessary to help that person develop a plan to be safe. And that's what you kind of, for a person that's thinking of committing suicide, they basically look at it as just being two options. That one is living, and they look at living as being, I can't keep living like this. And then they think, well, the only other option is dying. That will be better than this. They don't know dying, but it has to be better than what they're at right now. But what you're trying to do is give them a third option where you can be safe for now. And we'll sort out the rest later. But you want to get them to a safe place. And so you want to help them develop a safe plan. You may even need to assist them in developing a safe plan. That sometimes it's necessary. Okay, let's go to the hospital. You can go in the psych ward for a few days and they can monitor you so that you don't end up hurting yourself. That sometimes involves, okay, let's get maybe some of the drugs and alcohol out of the house so that's not going to be something that's going to be a factor. Sometimes getting the guns out of the house if they're there, or different things like that. But developing a safe plan for that individual is important. And of course, there's many individuals that you can call on to assist when someone you know is suicidal. You can call 911. RCMP will take, they won't exactly arrest the person, but it'll kind of be like that, where they'll take them to get the help they need. You can take them to the hospital. There's people that are ready to help. Crisis center. Others, places like that. Like, of course, for myself, like, I've taken the suicide training, and so it's something that I can help with as well. And so those are, when you realize things aren't, the person looks like they're not going to be coming out of the valley of grief, that where there's times where, because you care, you step in, you ask the questions, you try to make sure. But, of course, we hope that that person doesn't get going down that way. We instead want to be encouraging them to come out of it, and in not forcing them out, but helping them gradually, to help them see there is life after loss, and there's things that you can now grab hold of that can kind of help you to recover. And so you can invite them to different support organizations, maybe becoming part of a church where there's people that can help them and encourage them. Could be a good idea. Different counseling services that you can say, okay, well, these people kind of deal with grief counseling. They can kind of help you through these things. There's also different support groups available that you can have other people that are going through the same thing that you can help each other. Different invitations for socialization, where you encourage the person to you invite them over to your house and spend time with them. Invite them to some kind of get-together where they can be with other people. Encourage them to be hospitable again and invite other people to their house. And that there's different things you can do for them. But as well, invitations for service, and that's the really a big thing, is if trying to help a person realize that there is much more that they can do, and if they're helping others, that often can be some of the greatest therapy in helping them to get past their own sadness. And so it could be visiting the sick or the elderly, people that are alone themselves, people that are maybe struggling with illness, where you can be an encouragement to them, that can be helpful. Sometimes helping with children. Children a lot of times have kind of a exuberance and zest for life and can make a person laugh, that can be encouraging, especially if they're your own relations, or it can be a help. And then assisting others who have experienced loss, and that's kind of, as we've been talking about, kind of bringing it full circle, is that as we experience loss and the Lord gives us grace through that, helps us through it, then we want to then be used of Him to help other people. And that's when really we can say we've gotten to the other side, where our misery becomes our ministry, that we are able to help others because we've been helped as well. But it's kind of the thing that just as kind of we need God's help when we're needing comfort. We can be at a loss of how to help someone's grieving, but God is able to give us the grace that we need through that time of grief, so that we can comfort the individual. And not just us trying to comfort the individual as best as we can, but rather where God is actually comforting that individual through us. That's what we're aiming for. And that's the thing, that we can, when we have needs, when we have struggles, we can come boldly into the throne of grace in prayer to God and find mercy and grace to help in time of need, where He gives us the ability, the words to say, the ability to love as He loved, to be able to help that person. And we see this verse again, we looked at last time as well, but God is the God of all comfort, and He comforts us in our tribulation, and so that we may be able to comfort them which are in any trouble with the same comfort that we're comforted of God. And so it's learning that God helps us. We go through trials, we go through sadness, and we receive God's comfort, and so then we share God's comfort with other people. And the reality is that presently we live in a world where there is going to be loss, there is going to be sorrow, there is going to be grief. And that's going to be the way it's going to be for some time. But yet, as we learn to look to God for comfort, and we learn to reach out to each other in times of sorrow, we can help each other through the valley of grief and get to the other side of it. And we can discover healing, we can discover recovery, and we can get a renewed purpose, where it isn't where we think, I just can't live anymore, that we can sit and say, no, I have something to live for now. It's not the same life I had before, but this is a new stage. There's something I can do. I can have meaning to my life again and value. And of course, we can do that knowing one day, one wonderful day, our sorrows will come to an end. In Revelation 21:4, and God shall wipe away all tears from their eyes, and there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor cry, neither shall there be any more pain, for the former things are passed away. And how do we look forward to that day when that will be true? But until then, we know that there's going to be sorrow, but we do have a comforter, and that we can find comfort in one another. All right, any thoughts or questions as we conclude? Well, that's kind of the thing, is that you don't have to do it all at once. And that's sometimes what we think we have to do, is that wait, maybe, like, save it for, say, a couple weeks after the funeral when they're all alone. Then you've had the time to kind of formulate, oh, this is something I can say. And it just, because sometimes, because they might be in shock and trying to process things, they might not even remember anything you say. in that first week or so, but they might remember what you say later on. And so, yeah, it is kind of worthwhile to make it that really it's a commitment to comfort, where I'm not just going to kind of dive in and do something and then kind of go on with my life. That is, say, no, they're going to need help for a while, and so I'm going to be there faithfully to be that comfort to them. Yes?
Does it make note of those special days and anniversaries? Because you won't necessarily remember them, but they will.
Yes.
Having a bad day, and I've written in my book all that's years and her father passed away, so I feel older.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't even remember why she was having a bad day. But make connections.
Yeah. Well, I know there is this one widow that I visited recently, and it was kind of funny because I had kind of a list of people I was planning to visit, but the one person wasn't going to be available. So then I just kind of prayed, okay, well, Lord, who else should I visit? So then her name came into my mind. So I called her up and said, oh, yeah. And so then I came, well, I know why you're here. And I said, okay, well, I'm... Yeah, and I didn't realize it, but it was actually the second anniversary of her husband's funeral. And so it was like, I didn't remember, but God did. And so he kind of pointed me to go there. And it just, it meant a great deal that I would come on that day. She needed that boost for that day. And so having that kind of thoughtfulness to say, okay, this is going to be hard, this is going to be hard. And it's like there's a lot of different things like that you can start to think of. Like Father's Day can be hard, or anything like that. Yeah, it can. And really, if it's a day of the accident, that I remember, I know one family that lost their daughter, and it. You'd think, like, it's years afterwards, but still that day is the day that they remember. Like, it just, as soon as it comes on the calendar, all the memories flood back. And so it's worthwhile to remember that. All right, well, of course, we are going to be taking a break on the sessions because we're waiting for someone to arrive. Little baby that's due in a few weeks, and so it's probably going to be end of March, beginning of April, we'll see sessions on forgiveness, both on finding forgiveness for ourselves and learning to forgive others. And so we'll post those, kind of advertise those once we're ready to go for that. So, all right.